Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Good morning. This is Meg Scher, the director of the David M. Hunt Library in Falls Village, and I'm here today with Leslie Battis, the assistant director of the North Fork Library. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
I've been really looking forward to having this conversation with you. Today we're talking about the most popular books of 2025, and I can't wait to see how your books, the books that were most popular at your library, line up with what was most popular at our library.
It is dependent on community, isn't it? Like
yeah,
the community that you're in, exactly.
Yes,
I mean,
absolutely.
Geographically, we're not that far apart, but, you know, we have different communities. And so I will tell you with a drum roll, that our number one book was Isola by Allegra Goodman.
Oh, interesting. And that one didn't end up on my list at all. How fascinating.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that is incredible.
And what was yours?
So I was looking at the ones that went out the most.
Right.
And so, you know, we had a number, I think our highest circulation for a book was 15 circulations, which in a community our size is pretty impressive. And, you know, depending on the time that it takes people to read and all those kinds of things. So we had three that were tied at the top. One of them was Wild Dark Shore by Charlotte McConaughey, which I just read and absolutely adored. The other one was The God of the Woods by Liz Moore, which is not was not a new book this year, but people got re-excited about it. And the last one was All the Colors of the Dark by Chris Whitaker.
Oh, my goodness. That's so interesting.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them, you know, and I'm sure you know this too, think books that librarians are excited about, more people read.
Yes.
Right? So we had, or patrons in general. So I know I had a lot of patrons who read All the Colors of the Dark. I didn't personally read it, but I would be able to say people have been excited about this book, and they took it out more often.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I think our recommendations do actually hold sway, which is nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have, I've been really enjoying, Leslie, your social media posts about what the staff's favorite books are. And I'm wondering, do you have a display in the library?
Oh, about those books?
Yeah, or what staff, do you have a staff pick display?
Oh, no, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to write little notes on a book and with a sticky note that says good book or good read or something like that.
Smart. Yep.
And then people will then, you know, pick those books up. And sometimes what's fun is they will add a comment, agree, or, you know, particularly liked this. And so it almost becomes this little conversation sticky, you know, with the book.
Oh, I love that idea. We have a staff selection, table, and so people often gravitate to that when they ask for recommendations. And something I'm kind of sneaky with doing is if there are books that I want someone to read or are on my list but I haven't gotten to them yet, I put them on the staff picks table and say, I haven't read it, but I'm so excited about it. Can you read it and tell me what you think?
I love that.
And then I'm able to recommend them to people, which is fun.
Yes, that's great. I really like that idea.
Leslie, what were some other favorite books of 2025?
The Frozen River surprised me. It's on the list again.
Wow, that's another one. It's been years. It's incredible.
Yes, 3 years or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Another older one, well, Louise Penny, The Gray Wolf. I think people were reading that, getting ready for the next release.
Yep.
So that was on there. A surprise for me was an Allie Hazelwood book, The Deep End.
Oh.
And Atmosphere, of course, by Taylor Jenkins Reid was on there.
Mm-hmm. And did you, what was your nonfiction list? Because I was interested, so I didn't sort based on nonfiction or fiction. And I was not surprised that it is mostly fiction, but some of the nonfiction picks surprised me. So I'm curious about what yours were.
Yes. We had three that were tied for the top with 13 circulations, which is pretty good.
Yeah, for nonfiction, that's incredible.
It was The Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins, Memorial Days by Geraldine Brooks, and I know you really enjoyed that.
Yep, and that was our top nonfiction pick.
And then I Regret Almost Everything by Keith McNally.
People liked that in my library too, but it didn't make the list. Our two other ones were 1491 by Charles Mann, which totally blew my mind, and The Serviceberry by Robin Wall Kimmer.
Oh, yes,
which we actually ended up with two I had two of them, and so we were able to really send them out a lot, and it's a short one. So I think that probably also helped. You know, if the reading time is shorter, more people are able to access the book.
I think that's true of one of the other nonfiction books, which was Raising Hair by Chloe Dalton, because that's also a smaller book, and that went out a bunch.
That's on my list for my audiobook list. I still have several months wait, but I'm looking forward to it. Were there any other best books, most popular books of 2025 that stood out to you, Leslie?
I was surprised by our number two fiction book, which was Broken Country by Claire Leslie Hall.
Mm-hmm. That was on our list, too, but not quite so high.
Yeah.
Did you read that?
I did not, and I was like, what is that? I actually had to go, you know, look it up and see what it was about. So I was wondering how our lack of books this year from Baker & Taylor would affect our, our numbers. But there's only two books in our top 16 that were published before 2025. So I guess it wasn't too bad of an impact.
Yeah, that's such an interesting thing to think about, how that makes a difference. And I saw, I can't remember where it was, but some not book or library-centered media source, you know, I saw on social media, put an article out about the Baker and Taylor conundrum and how it was affecting public libraries. And, you know, they're a little late to the game, but it made me happy to see, you know, it might have even been like Entertainment Weekly or something.
Oh, interesting.
To see a more generalized news source bringing that information to share with the public. I thought that was really interesting.
Yes, it is. Yes.
I was feeling very good about myself because I had read a lot of the most popular books. And again, I think that goes to say what your librarian is reading, people are interested in, right?
Yes, exactly. So true.
And one of my favorite books that was pretty high up on our list, which I'm usually not like a psychological thriller reader, but I read Alice Feeney for the first time this year. I read Beautiful Ugly, which is a story about an island full of women, and this one man shows up on the island and all these crazy things happen. And I stayed up far too late reading it, which is, you know, the thing that happens with thrillers. But that was one of my favorite books on the list.
Very good. I think that moving ahead probably on you, but I think Isola was probably my favorite book on the list. And now I know why I waited so long for it.
Right. There's a number of books actually that didn't make it on the list that I've had on my hold list, like the new Lily King, Heart the Lover, I've been waiting for.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone's just been taking their time with it, and that's totally fine. But I wonder if it would have circulated more and been on the list if it had gone faster.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, let's keep talking about this same vein, Leslie, and let's talk about what the most requested books have been in the last couple weeks, so jumping into 2026.
For us, it's been, as you mentioned, Heart the Lover by Lily King.
Oh, how funny.
The Land in Winter by Andrew Miller. And then a very popular book is Mona's Eyes by Thomas Schlesser.
Yeah.
So those are our three. How about you?
Oh, interesting. I've been waiting to get Mona's Eyes, and we haven't gotten it. I really want it. I hope it arrives soon. You're reminding me to check on that. Our three are totally different. The new Dan Brown, The Secret of Secrets. Mm-hmm. Dick Van Dyke's biography called 100 Rules for Living to 100. And Buckeye. Buckeye is still one of the most requested, and I think it's partially because it's a little bit bigger of a book, and it takes people longer to get through. And so there's still a line.
It's still a line. Oh, that's an interesting observation, Meg. I like that.
Yeah, and that's one I haven't gotten my hands on yet either, which is,
I haven't either.
No, I'd like to, you know, I have something to look forward to.
Yes.
What are some of the books that you've been enjoying reading, Leslie?
Well, as I mentioned, I finally got a hold of Isola, and I read that. And it's so interesting. I don't know if you know the background on the book at all, but it is historical fiction. So it's based, which blew my mind, it's based on the true story of Marguerite de la Roque, who is, it starts in 1542 in France, and she's a young noblewoman. She becomes an orphan and is placed under the care of a guardian that she has never met.
Oh.
And he sells her lands and her home, which was like he shouldn't have been doing, of course, to pay off his debts and to fund his next voyage to New France, which is now Canada. Takes her on this voyage with him, which was pretty bold. And then in a fit of rage, he maroons her on an island in the St. Lawrence Seaway where they're made and the man that she loves.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine? Yeah, it's
no.
quite the survival story. I felt that the pace was kind of slow at times, but I also felt like that was probably on purpose. Because let's face it, you're on a tiny island.
Right,
you know,
how much can happen.
Right.
Yeah.
you know, Marguerite was the main character. She went through so much that she didn't deserve it all. But she survives and she becomes a strong, resilient woman, which was a bad thing in the 1550s.
Right.
And so her story after she returns to France, I found very interesting, depressing to a modern reader, but also pretty interesting. And the author's note is a really good one to read. So.
Wow. I'm going to have to put this on my list. I know we have it. I'm going to go find it when I go back downstairs.
Yeah. And what about you? What have you been reading?
I just finished The Names by Florence Knapp, which I had been debating whether or not I was going to read. You know, it was on almost every best of the year list. And I have to say, 5 stars, highly recommend.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. So the premise is that this baby is born in a relationship that includes a lot of domestic violence. And the wife, it opens, and the mother is going to register her son's name. And there's a family name that's been carried down through this line of kind of, you know, abusive men.
Mm-hmm.
And should she stick with that one, which is what's expected of her? Should she pick the name that she wants? Or should she pick the name that her 5-year-old daughter suggests? And so the book goes through what happens if each of those names was picked.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, and it's in a 7-year cycle. So, you know, the first one is when they pick the name
mm-hmm.
and what happens as a result of which name gets chosen. And then the next one is when the kid is 7 and what's happening then. And so it goes all the way through adulthood.
Wow.
And it's a really, not only is it a fascinating, well-written book, and I couldn't put it down, but it's a really interesting commentary on domestic violence
mm-hmm.
and the choice to stay or not to stay mm-hmm. and kind of asking for help and what is available to you. And I found it to be, I mean, I cried at multiple mm-hmm. points in the book.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really powerful.
I got to add that to my list.
Yeah, it was a really good one, and it came on our shelves later. So now, of course, you know, I have a waiting list because I've been telling everybody this book is so amazing. You have to read it. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was one of our 2026 higher, more popular books.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I've been listening to some great nonfiction because I was home a lot during the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to, it's been on the bestsellers list, I don't think it is this week, There Is No Place for Us by Brian Gladstone. It's about the working homeless in America, and it is very dark and heavy and very important. It focuses on different families and couples in Atlanta and in the suburbs of Atlanta who are trying to make lives for themselves and how, you know, even working multiple jobs, it's impossible to own a home, not even own a home, rent a home, keep an apartment,
right.
And, you know, a lot of the gentrification that takes down these subsidized housing communities and replaces them. But where do those people go?
Right.
And parents sleeping in their cars and getting their kids taken away because, you know, and what does homeless actually mean? If you're in a extended stay hotel, you're not technically homeless. You literally have to be on the street in order to get a lot of this assistance. And just the hoops that we make people jump through and how we don't, the ways that assistance is given actually isn't the way that it's needed, and it isn't helpful, and it sometimes puts people in worse positions than they were already in, and how hard people have to work to make it, you know, and it was a really important read and made me really sad.
Yes, it's a sad situation, and I think as, you know, in where we live,
mm-hmm.
it's so difficult for young people to try to afford to live here. And that affects so many things, including the school system and services and the ambulance. And yes, it's very difficult.
Absolutely. And I thought a lot about that, you know, the parallels between the Northwest corner and housing scarcity in urban Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But I really highly recommend that one. And the other one that I listened to, I just finished The Art Thief, which was very popular maybe 2 years ago. And the audiobook is so good. and it's about a couple who in their 20s steals more than 200 pieces of art, and they are master thieves. I mean, it is fascinating to listen to how they steal things, and they don't sell it, which is the way that often art thieves get caught. They just have it decorating this tiny apartment in his mother's house, and the second half of the book talks about when they do get caught and all of that, but I really, it was fascinating to get into a serial thief's mind. It was really something.
That was a really good book. I really enjoyed that one.
Leslie, what kind of things are happening at your library? I can't wait to hear about what you have planned in the new year.
Well, we have a lot going on because it's January. And because January is so January, we do schedule a lot. We started a movie series called Thursday Night at the Movies. And on January 22nd, the movie is Local Hero. And then every week we sort of pick another one off our shelves and show it. And people come in and they have a little popcorn or a little beverage and enjoy having a movie on the big screen.
Oh, lovely.
And then for our teens on January 23rd, they've chosen to watch a movie, Forrest Gump, which I was surprised by.
Oh, what a great pick. I love that.
Yeah. And so that'll be fun to have them in doing that. We have Thursday, January 29th at 10 a.m., we have a digital safety workshop for adults.
Oh, how important.
It's an interactive workshop. It's led by the Director of Community Engagement for Project SAGE, which is a group that you told me about.
Yeah.
And they will be outlining some of the threats people face in today's digital world and also help people put together a plan of action for responding to whatever may come along. And I decided that I need to go to this because I read these 10 action points and I was like, okay, I need to do this.
Hey, more information is never bad.
Exactly. So that will be a good one. And then our first Monday book group is reading Our Endless Numbered Days by Claire Fuller.
Mm.
And we'll discuss the book on Monday, February 2nd at 6 p.m. And all of these events and many more are listed on our website. How about you, Meg?
Well, this Saturday, we're welcoming back everyone's favorite wildlife conservationist, Ginny Apple.
Ginny Apple, she's great.
She is. She's the best. So Saturday the 17th at 1 p.m., this is my favorite title of all of her talks she's ever given here, Things That Go Bump in the Night. So it's about nocturnal animals. And so I'm excited to learn about nocturnal animals. And, you know, I find what I really love about Ginny is that sometimes kids come, and it can be a real intergenerational program.
Mm-hmm.
And accessible to all ages, and I love the way that she works in noises and videos and all of that. Also, next week we have a virtual program that I'm really excited about with Ariel, let's make sure I get the name right. I mean, I'll do my best. Kayobasi, who is the author of Ski Jumping in the Northeast, Small Towns and Big Dreams. Yeah, and she grew up in Lakeville and was a Swasa ski jumper, and so mm-hmm. she really knows what she's talking about. Unfortunately, she lives in New Hampshire, so she couldn't come and do it in person, but I'm really excited. So you can sign up for that on our website, huntlibrary.org. It's January 22nd at 6 p.m. We have... Once a year, we do a art wall collaboration with the kids at the elementary school next door, and so mm-hmm. that show just went up, and we call it the Kellogg Students Emerging Artist Exhibition.
I bet it's amazing.
It's wonderful, and it's mixed media faces, so there's some clay, and there's some collage, and there's some paint, and they all came in when we had Vincent Incognilios' show uh-huh. FaceTime up and met with Vincent and heard about his process, and they made art inspired by those faces. And it is such a fun, especially on a dreary day like today, it is such a fun, bright exhibit. They have some faces made out of vegetables. I mean, it's really, it's really wonderful. The last thing I want to mention is that our big winter fundraiser is called Midwinter's Night in the Village. It's happening on Valentine's Day this year. We do it mm-hmm. on the Saturday closest to Valentine's Day, and we decided to go for it. So February 14th from 6 to 8 p.m., and it features a 16-foot-long breadboard of baked treats. Yep, we have wine and hot chocolate, and we have singers and poetry readers, and it is a really wonderful event, and it's for all ages, and tickets can be purchased on our website.
Sounds fun. Sounds great. Well, we both have a lot going on, which is good.
Yep. It's good to get through the winter at the library for sure.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much, Leslie. It was wonderful to talk to you as always.
Yes. We'll see you next time.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.